Dansker, June 1980, Les Ouches.
Well, in those days, probability was not as developed as it is now, and there weren't infinitely many thesis topics. To find a topic that a student could do was already, you know, something. So, Katz would give students thesis topics, and Chung would get a hold of the student in the library the day after Katz gave him the topic and ask him, what did Katz give you? What did Katz give you? And the kid would tell Chung, you know, what the thesis topic was. Then Chung would go home and spend the whole night. Then the next morning he'd come to Katz. How could you give this topic to so-and-so? Look! And you hand him a manuscript.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's not how to win friends. Then, the funniest thing, historically also interesting, one of the funniest incidents at Cornell was my office mate upstairs. I just received my PhD the year before. My office mate upstairs was a very shy Dane by the name of Erik Sperra Andersen, the fellow who did, you know, the combinatorial lemma, which Spitzer's identity was the refinement.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was the days in which one was doing limit theorems, classical limit theorems. Mm-hmm. And the arc-sine law had been rediscovered by Katz, although Levy had done it earlier, but Katz had rediscovered it using these techniques that were going around at the time. But of course it required the hypotheses of the central limit theorem, namely independent variables with two moments and so on. So Andersen, who didn't know a differential equation from anything, I mean, knew no analysis really at all, but had tremendous combinatorial skills. I mean, he really could count and so on. He heard about the arc-sine law. He went home and he thought about it. And he came in one day and he said, you know, he says, the arc-sine law is true without any assumption about moments. Well, now, if you think that the central limit theorem is necessary, you know that that can't be solved, you see. He says, it's a geometrical thing. He says it has to do with symmetry. Well, nobody believed that. I mean, that was clear nonsense, you see, and especially Chung. Chung, but the next day, Feller, who had tremendous insight about such things, came around and he says, you know, he says, Andersen may be right. And of course, Andersen had been completely crushed when everybody told him it can't be true. I mean, he was not the kind of personality, you know, to say, but I can prove it. I mean, that wasn't his style. I mean, he'd go home and think about it some more. So as soon as Feller said he thought it might be true, that got Chung going, because now he's very defensive. He couldn't have this Dane beat him at something. So Chung went home. And he announced the next day, yes, Andersen was right, and he, Chung, could prove it. So we had a seminar. Chung got up, and halfway through, it was all wrong. I mean, it was really flagrantly wrong. I mean, it was completely wrong. And it was rather embarrassing for Chung, and he didn't like to be embarrassed. Then the next day, Andersen came along and says, I think I can prove it. Perhaps we should, you know. So then we met. And it was a terribly complicated, you know, and none of us were used to that kind of thing, because it was very complicated combinatorics, and Andersen didn't speak English all that well. But there was enough of it there, you know, nothing like that could be wrong, you know what I mean? It had to be right. And Feller understood it better than anybody, and he said, yes, I can see this right. And when it was all over, Chung got up, he was all red in the face. He said, it may be correct. My proof may have been wrong, but it was beautiful.
It doesn't happen that at this particular time so many probabilists...
That's a very important story. Part of it, of course, was the attraction of the two personalities, namely Katz and Feller, who were there. But in addition, it's really a great testimony, I think, to the United States, in that the very first large project of the Office of Naval Research was that project in probability at Cornell. And in those days, the Office of Naval Research was administered by a mathematician, Minna Rees, a woman, a mathematician, a good friend of some of us. And she set up that project under the direction of Feller. Mm-hmm. And fell, and I think it was really the first major project where there was quite a bit of money invested. So Feller was given money for visitors. And, you know, I'm talking about 47, 48. It was just after the war. And he succeeded in, you know, he had an eye also, and he succeeded in getting people from all over the world to come. And that attracted more
young people
to come. And, you know, it so permeated the Cornell atmosphere at the time that the other people in the math department, like Fuchs and Pollard, either ended up writing, which they did, some papers in probability, or the other people could hardly stand it. Every seminar was a probability seminar. And I remember R.J. Walker, who recently retired from there, who was in algebraic geometry, saying if he heard the word arcsine law once more, he was going to leave. But it was a terribly exciting time. Every day, you know, people would come in with new results. And
but who was at that time?
Well, at the I came in 48, and when Darling had just left, when I was there, Feller was there, Kotz was there, Dube came for the year in 49, and young people in the department were Chung and Hunt. Visitors from abroad were Elfing from Finland, Sperra Anderson from Denmark. Among the students were Snell and Kinney. Well, they came, I guess, when Dube came. And Joanne Elliott was a graduate student. Dan Ray came, I think, the year after I left, which was 50. Feller had also left. Rosenblatt was a graduate student of Kotz's at the time, and then people, of course, would come in and out. I remember Kakatani came, Erdős came. I mean, there were lectures all the time. It was kind of, when Kakatani came, I think it was his first trip after the war.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was his first trip after the war, and he talked, you know, about some of the things connected with boundary value problems. It was marvelous. Oh, yes. The whole time was one of the most exciting times one can imagine. And the amount of things produced, the ideas that were going on, of course, for probability, it was an enormously pregnant time because all of these subjects were just breaking. Kotz was coming in every hour with a new idea. Feller was terribly busy. First of all, of course, writing the book, but in addition, he was just beginning his interest in semigroups and so on. I remember when Hilla came and talked about semigroups and so on, I witnessed that, and Feller got all excited about the connections with parabolic equations. It was a great time. I certainly shall never forget it, and also profited enormously from it.
Yes, I think that this is a little disadvantage of general American system, that people are, as a rule, of course, there exist exceptions, but usually they are dispersed.
Yes, it's almost too much. And then please remember that in the physics department was not only sitting Beta, but most important for some of us was Feynman. Mm-hmm. And Feynman came over to Whitehall, to the math department, and talked for the first time about his new idea called path integrals.
I see.
So and, you know, without knowing that there had ever been.
So names of Feynman and Kotz, which are cited here.
Yeah, exactly, yes.
Together.
Were right there. That's right. Oh, yes, right there. And, of course, Kotz at that time was terribly important because he was the bridge between physics and mathematics at that time. So that the, you know, Feller and Kotz had very different personalities, and Dube still a different personality, and that was all very important because that added a great deal of richness to the mix.
Is it a time that the choice of between chance variable and random variable? The name random variable was introduced at that time?
Oh, that I didn't know. I thought that was long.
Told me that.
Really?
Yeah, during such time, there was dispute to which chance variable and
really?
Random variable.
Good Lord. No, that I had never focused on that.
Uh-huh.
It was always random variable for me in my lifetime. So
yes, I only remember.
But of course, when I came to Cornell, I came as a boy from the country. You know, I had come from a place where there was no probability at all. Minnesota.
You came after your PhD?
Yes, that was my first job after my PhD. And I came.
And your PhD was influenced by whom?
By Cameron, R.H. Cameron, which was integration and function space, and Wiener integration. That I had been brought up on. But there was certainly no probability whatsoever. And so, you know, I'd written a thesis, after all, in probability. That's where the invariance principle came from, without anybody in probability around, and now without ever having a course in probability. So when I arrived at Cornell, it was particularly awkward because I didn't really know what a Markov chain was at the time. I knew what independent random variables were, however. And it was...
Katz just arrived at the time. I mean,
no, Katz had been at Cornell. The reason I went to Cornell is because he had come to Minnesota. I think he was all of, well, he must have been about 30. Let's see, this is 1948, and that was 32 years ago. Yes, he was 32. He was 32. Mm-hmm. And he had come to give a lecture at Minnesota. And, well, I had never heard anybody like that in my life. I mean, he came in full of enthusiasm. He was like a whirlwind, you know. And I had decided at that time that I had to be near that. So I followed him.
He is a marvelous lecturer.
Oh, yeah. And he was very inspiring to me. And so I went to Cornell to be near him, indeed.
And what about this volume one of book five?
Well, yeah.
It was written...
Right then. And it was written, as a matter of fact, partly supported by that ONR project. I referred to that Office of Naval Research project. And the book, I think, it says something by the Office of Naval Research. And, well, Perfeller, it was a tremendous burden for him because nobody had written a book of that kind.
But this was really a revolutionary book.
Oh, yes. It was. And all of us were aware, and I think he was, that it was going to be a terribly important book. I don't think, by the way, any of us conceived of how important, in a sense, I think it's really true historically, if you could trace it, that before the appearance of that book, the number of courses in probability taught in the United States anywhere could probably be numbered on one hand. You know, the only book I think that existed in English was that book by Uspensky that had been translated. Everything else was either in French or in German or in Russian. And, Chung and I, and I think a couple of the graduate students, read the manuscript as it came out.